Today, as we venture out on the wine road, you'll hear the story of Belden Barnes. Nate Belden was a farm boy growing up, but spent much of his early adult life in New York and San Francisco, then began feeling the unrelenting tug of country life once again. Lauren, who is now his wife, grew up in New York City, but surprisingly had a similar dream.
On our first date, we were talking about we were both at career crossroads, and we were talking about, well, what would you like to do? And she said, you know, I would love to live in a small house on a big property in Sonoma. And I looked at her and I said, really? Wow, why?
I'm Jeff Davis, and when I met up with Nate, I didn't expect him to fill the full hour of my radio show, but his story and all they're doing on the farm and in their personal life provided enough audio for him to be the sole guest on my show, so it will be one of my longer podcasts. One thing that captured my eye on his website was his statement that the fog, the sun, Pacific breezes, and the volcanic soils of Sonoma Mountain produce magical wines. If you heard my podcast about the passion of the industry, I featured a number of vintners and growers who also believe in that kind of magic. And that ends up being our first topic.
Yeah, it's a magical area, particularly this pocket in Bennett Valley, Sonoma Mountain. It's sort of a hidden area, still very rural, a lot of small family vineyards. And there does seem to be a lot of magic. I think you said you visited the Vanderkamps. Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on there. a lot of magic and other.
Yeah. Ulysses was one of them.
Yes. Yeah. Ulysses is amazing. And it is. There's something here that it captured me from the first time I saw this place. It's a beautiful spot.
Yeah. Let's move on to that, because what an interesting road it took you to where you are today. You had such an agricultural youth, but you ended up working in San Francisco and New York City.
Yeah, I was steeped in agriculture. I had a grandfather who was a cattle rancher in Montana. The other side of my family were corn and dairy farmers in Nebraska. My dad's a horse veterinarian, and I grew up in a rodeo family on a horse farm. And I think, like anybody who's completely steeped in that, you either double down or you just move as far away from it as you possibly can.
Right.
And I was ready to get out. And so, yes, I started my career in New York, had a very urban career for a long stretch, had a tour of duty in New York. I loved it, but I knew I wanted to get back west. I'd grown up in Colorado and had an opportunity in San Francisco and got out here. And I really didn't know anything about wine before moving to California. We had zero wine in my family growing up. I was lucky if there was 3.2 Coors in the fridge. Mm. And I actually thought it was sort of a blowhard industry, pontificating about all these things in this glass.
Sure.
But when you move to the Bay Area, it's hard to avoid wine. And the more I learned, the more I got really intrigued about the farming side of it. That's sort of what led me into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then really realized this isn't a lot of BS. There's a lot to this that relates to how you farm, your decisions on your vineyard setup, all the way through all the thousands of decisions you can make in making a wine. And then it took me. I was really fascinated, and was getting burnt out on what I was doing and wanted to make a life change. And so really started pointing this direction.
Yeah, tell me about that fateful weekend when you came up here and on a whim you went off and looked at a property, and that's what actually brought you to where you are today. And I had a similar experience, which is why I'm here talking with you today.
Yeah, well, yeah, we were just talking about that, what the magic that brings us to Sonoma. So I had been getting increasingly burnt out on what I was doing. The story is I was on a long flight back from the East Coast where I'd been probably 5 weeks in a row, and I picked up some magazines at the newsstand and picked up a National Geographic in that handful, and they had a spread of Midwestern barns in it. And one of the pictures was this probably 4-year-old boy in overalls with two dog pups in his hands. And that was me at that age. And I just looked at that and I said, you know what? I just have got to do it. I've got to make a change. And so I got back and I said, I've got to figure out even what it means to look at a farm in Sonoma. and went online and started looking at some farm listings. And this happened to be near the July 4th weekend. Had some friends that had, we'd all rented a house, there were about 10 of us over in the Yountville area. Mm. And I saw the listing for this farm, and so I stole away to come look at it. And I just fell in love with it. And I couldn't swing it financially at the time, but it really accelerated my interest. And so I started enrolling in classes distance-wise at Davis and then taking some weekend seminars there. And wow. Then also doing some classes at the JC here in Santa Rosa in both farming and winemaking. And really started going deep on wine. And then I would literally just drive up about once a month and just drive by the property. And my wife, Lauren, says it's a lot like the Christmas story where he's looking at the BB gun in the window and just pining for it.
Arrival.
And so I did that for about a year, and I drove by one day and the for sale sign had gotten pulled, and it just really ripped at me. And I really realized at that point how much I wanted both the change and wanted it to be in this spot. And so I was pretty distraught. I got back home and I emailed the realtor and said, hey, looks like you sold that property. I'm in a better position now. I wasn't really in that much of a better position, but I just realized I should have stretched a little bit. And I said, if something like that comes up, please contact me. I want to look at it. And she emailed me within an hour and said, this fell out of escrow today. So I don't know if that's true or not, but that was the story. Yeah. And she said, if you want to do something, it's time to do it. So then I got my ducks in a row and sort of went for it.
That's crazy. What year was this?
That was, so initially saw the property in 2004. So that would have been July 2004, and then ended up being able to purchase the property in June of 2005.
Well, still pretty quick.
Yeah. No, it was, you know, it was about a year, and then... and then things really accelerated once I contacted her and said, look, I really want to do this. And, you know, she had said it's available. So then, yeah, from there on. And then it's been a long journey and sort of painstakingly trying to piece the property back together.
That's interesting, though, that you went ahead and started the classes. So you were pretty determined to do something in viticulture or winemaking. And you started the process.
Absolutely. No, I knew this is where I was headed, and I thought it may not be at this particular property, but I knew it was what I wanted to do. And I knew it was also a holistic thing. This site had a long history of not just grapes, but diversified agriculture, sheep farming, prune orchard, grapes. And that's something I really wanted to tie into was doing something diversified, and I could sort of see that in my mind's eye here. And so not only was I taking viticulture and winemaking classes, but I was taking organic farming classes at the JC. I mean, for those that don't know, the JC at Schoen Farm has one of the best spots in the nation to learn about farming. It's an amazing resource. I was all in and trying to learn for when I could finally find a place to settle.
Now, I haven't seen the whole property, but I haven't noticed any horses here yet. Are they going to be arriving at some point?
You know what? We're not. I don't think we're going to have horses here. I have a love of horses, but they require a lot of land to maintain things sustainably. They're a little tough on land in Sonoma, which gets so dry. Where I grew up, we had summer rain and could manage some pastures and keep things green. And we are definitely going to have animals. I'm sort of an all creatures great and small grown-up kid. Mm-hmm. And we will be bringing on some milk animals probably this fall. We're going to start with some cows. And then Lauren and I have had some pigs on site, and we're going to bring some pigs back and some chickens. Lauren's trying to talk me into some goats. I was allergic to milk when I was a kid, and so to have milk, I had to milk my own goat. And I think that was part of the reason. That and the fact that goats are really crafty animals, and when they get out, they know how to do some damage. It's not just little damage. They'll eat the fender of your car. So it's we're having a little bit of a couple's discussion on goats or not, but there are definitely going to be some farm animals here shortly.
Speaking of couples discussions, as you heard, Nate's wife, Lauren, was a city girl, having grown up in New York. She had a successful career in brand development and strategy with clients like Domino's Pizza, FedEx, and Chanel. So I had to ask Nate, how did she initially accept this idea of moving to a farm?
It just worked. It makes me a little emotional, but on our first date, we were talking about we were both at career crossroads, and we were talking about, well, what would you like to do? And she said, you know, I would love to live in a small house on a big property in Sonoma.
Wow.
And I looked at her and I said, really? Wow. Why? And Lauren had grown up in New York City, total city kid, but she would spend her summers on Martha's Vineyard, which is an island off of the coast of Massachusetts near Boston, and it's very rural. It's very similar, actually, to Sonoma in a way. There's a lot of sheep there, a lot of agriculture, and the whole feel up here in Sonoma really reminded her of that. And so she really had a love for Sonoma when we met. And then, yeah, she was really at the top of her game in brand strategy and innovation. She had helped open an office of a really creative firm here in San Francisco and was their head of creative. And she and I both sort of came together at the same point in our lives where we were just really contemplating, do we really want to go down this path further or do we want to start something new? And we fell in love really quickly. And we were older when we met and we wanted to start a family. And we both knew that we didn't want to raise a family having travel heavy careers and felt like we wanted to really have something proprietary and do our own thing. And so it really made sense to do this. You know, we've been grape growers now for 14 years. And when you sell your grapes to other folks, they give you bottles of wine to show you what they've been doing with your grapes.
Yeah.
And we sell to some great producers. I mean, we're selling to Donnellan, Carlisle, Argo, Eric Kent, a lot of folks that make beautiful wines. And Lauren didn't know a ton about wine, but we'd share some of these bottles. And, you know, one after the other, she would say, I think this could be the best wine I've ever had. And, you know, we just started triangulating around it and saying, you know, Nate, you have a background in making companies run well. I have a background in creating brands. Oh. And we have great grapes here. If we can't do this, shame on us. And so it all just lined up. It was the lifestyle we wanted to raise our kids in. It was also where we wanted to be. We wanted to be growing something we were really invested in, where we could create community, create great products that we were excited about. And so we just went for it.
Yeah. And what an excellent partner to have in building a new business.
Absolutely. We get asked a lot of times that people say you can work with your spouse and, they say, oh my God, I think we would be divorced in about 2 days. But, one, we're super complementary from a skill set standpoint. So we don't step on each other's toes. Mm-hmm. And we're really, you know, wine, it's really a passion business. It's, you know, coming from a business background, it's not the greatest business to just say, hey, I'm going to go do wine. And it's really about passion and loving what you're doing. And we both were just really passionate about it. And that's really, I think the backbone of it is we have a passion for what we're doing.
No surprise you're growing Pinot Noir and Chardonnay up here. Tell me about the other varietals you're working with.
So we're viewed as a little bit crazy. We have 20 acres of grapes, but we have 7 different varietals, and we have 10 different bottlings. So we wanted diversity, and the long-term vision was we wanted a wine for all occasions in life or all occasions in a meal. And we knew we wanted to stay small and be very family-focused, and that meant we're going to be selling mostly direct-to-consumer. And so we wanted to build a business where in the wine club, anybody could get their needs met. So yeah, we do grow a lot of different varietals. We're really known from a unique standpoint for our distinct whites, which are a little bit different. We have a Sauvignon Blanc, which is a northern Italian clone from the Rochaudo nursery near Colio. That's a really distinct, unique wine. And then I still think we're the only people in Sonoma that are growing Gruner Veltliner, which, so that's very unique for Sonoma, obviously, and just makes a beautiful wine.
Yeah, I've had it before, but I can't remember now. It's been a while since I've tried it, so I would like to try it again today. Your Sauvignon Blanc was amazing. It's so fun.
Yeah,
it's so much fruit to it, so much stone fruit, and it's unfiltered, unfined, so it's got a little cloudiness to it. A lot of flavor there.
Yeah, it's a kaleidoscope. It's, you know, as we were talking, it's Lauren's Last Supper wine. She says, when I go down in, you know, hopefully 50 years plus, it'll be down with a glass of this. But yeah, it's an extremely unique animal. The Gruner is really unique. It's not Sauvignon Blanc. It's not Chardonnay. It's got its own character. And, you know, all these wines have a story. The Gruner really was a product of another winemaker, Mike Officer at Carlisle, was here. He had some pre-plant interest in Syrah from our spot, and so he was looking at the vineyard. And we have about an 8-acre bench that's an ancient rock slide, and it's literally just rock cobble. Mm. And where it exposes itself to the west, David Steiner, who founded this vineyard, had built some rock terraces to plant vines in. And while Mike is viewed as one of the best Zinfandel and Syrah producers in North America, in his personal life, he's a Gruner freak. Mm. And so he saw these rock terraces, and they look like a little Wachau. The region that most notably grows Gruner in Austria, on the banks of the Danube, are these rock terraces. And he came back and he said, you've got to grow Gruner here. And so we rolled the dice. We let Mike talk us into it over a nice meal and some of his best bottles of Gruner. And we knew that if, you know, we were selling half of our fruit to Mike, he was going to give it best efforts. And so we'd really get to see what the vineyard was doing. And we were, at that time, we didn't have our label, but we were hoping that we were going to have a label. And we felt like we needed something a little bit out of left field to differentiate ourselves. And so that was the roll of the dice. Mm-hmm.
There was a time when Syrah would be that variety, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, you know, Syrah, when we got the property, Syrah was sort of the next big grape. And I think it's, you know, you've probably talked about it a lot. Syrah has a tough time in the marketplace. I think people sort of misunderstand it. The one thing is, though, when they taste it, they love it. So it's really about communication or just knowing the producers that are making it. There are a lot of different styles.
Right, that's the thing. Whether you find the one that strikes your fancy, but there's so many different styles out there, there's likely to be one.
Definitely. There's likely to be one. I mean, it's the same with Chardonnay, right? I mean, you have oaky butterballs, and you have austere sort of Chablis, and everything in between. You know, Syrah, though, I actually just came back from the winery. We're getting ready to bottle in February, and we're coming up with our final sort of assemblies. And the Syrah from this site is just absolutely gorgeous.
I'm in a barn on Sonoma Mountain talking with Nate Belden of Belden Barns. We'll continue on the topic of the varieties they're growing, including one of my favorites. And you'll hear about their partnership with two other farmers who handle their Belden Barns farmstead goods. That's coming up after this short break. We're back on the wine road. I'm talking with Nate Belden of Belden Barns. We talked about some of the grapes they're growing in the last segment. Another variety is Grenache, which has become one of my favorites. And I asked if they were going to be bottling that one sometime soon.
We are. Actually, this is sort of a just in. This just in. We just tasted the Grenache this morning for the first time. And we had made an experimental lot in 2015 that we loved, but it was only 44 cases. And we've got a vineyard vehicle behind us now. We just went with purchasing some big puncheons to make Grenache in this year. And tasted the 2018 this morning, and it is... Obviously, we all love our own children, but it is phenomenal, and it's just got so much character already that we were contemplating, should we bottle this right now? But I think we're going to wait till August, let it develop a little bit more. But yeah, we're very excited about the Grenache that's going to come off of here.
I'm happy to hear that because I wish there was more Grenache available out here. I just love that variety.
Yeah, it's also versatile, and I think that it's just an underknown grape. I think people love Pinot Noir for a certain reason. It's really approachable, and Grenache is really that analog for the Rhone region. It's a really approachable wine, but similar to actually any grape, you can have some that are much more interesting and complex versus simple, and it's just, you know, there's a variety. But it's, yeah, it makes beautiful wine, especially here. We're right on the edge of getting Grenache ripe, so it's a very cool climate representation of Grenache, which I think really adds some intensity to it. It's gorgeous. I'm with you. I love Grenache.
Let's talk about the farmstead. That's another interesting idea you came up with here, something that you're offering that, from what I read, was part of your initial vision of doing something along those lines.
Like I mentioned, when I found the spot, I not only was starting to revisit my roots and get educated in viticulture, but I really wanted to focus also on sustainable agriculture. I grew up around farming and realized how hard it is, and realized, particularly in Sonoma, with the land costs and the housing costs and, you know, just the whole element here of trying to get something off the ground in Sonoma, that it was going to be tough for somebody. And so we really wanted diversity on our site, and sort of in the end wanted to give someone a shot who really was dedicated to small-scale, sustainable, traditional farming, vegetables and orchard. And so we made a farmers-in-residence type of program. And basically what that means is we provide some subsidized housing and then provide an allocation of acreage, access to our equipment, our irrigation water, and basically say, go for it. For us, what that's going to mean is that we get good use of the land, but we also provide long-term some really rich, immersive experiences for the folks that visit the site, because we really want people to get out, get into the field, get their hands dirty, understand their food a little bit better, and then enjoy it with some wine. So it's sort of a full circle, 365-degree approach to Sonoma agriculture. We want to reflect everything that Sonoma's good at.
Right. And you hooked up with Jenny and Vince Trotter for this project.
Absolutely. Another form of serendipity. We'd been thinking about this from the get-go, and we had some really close friends that we had talked to about it, and one of my wife's best friends was an art teacher at an elementary school, and her co-teacher's daughter was getting interested in farming. And so that was Jenny Trotter. And Jenny and Vince reached out, and they had a similar path. They'd gone on to different careers. They actually were in New York and decided to make a big life change and dedicate themselves to farming and small-scale sustainable farming, and came back to California, did various internships, and they were looking for a spot. And it was just a great fit from the get-go. They're great people, young family. They have a son, Evan, who's right between the ages of our two kids, Milo and Olivia, and they're natural educators. And so we love that. When someone approaches them in the field, they're really happy to spend time and explain what they're doing and educate folks. And so we love that about them. And we're super happy to be partnered with them. They've done amazing. They just, a really high profile restaurant in San Francisco just yesterday, signed up for a lot of their capacity this coming year. And so that's a great win for them. Just like we love seeing our wines on great wine lists, right, we really take a lot of pride that food grown on site is showing up in really great restaurants as well.
Will that be presented as Belden Barnes peas or what have you?
You know what? It won't. We felt like we wanted this situation to be an opportunity for someone to get their feet under them and build their own business and possibly move on to bigger and better things if they do. So everything we do on the farm is Belden Barnes. But for Jenny and Vince, we're letting them use their own brand name, which is Kibo Farm. Kibo is a little wish in Japanese. And as you know, wishing, the wishing tree and sort of serendipity and big wishes is a big part of our brand. But we felt it was important that all the people we partnership on site really have some ownership in what they're doing. Right. So when they're not selling on site, they sell as Kibo Farm.
So in other words, if you're looking for winemakers or farmers, make sure you go to New York City because you can tap into the resources there.
Well, yeah. Well, you find a lot of people that realize their initial dreams may not have been the true path they were on. And I think New York allows you to realize that on a shorter fuse, maybe.
Yeah, I can see that. Nate was mentioning Kibo Farm was getting picked up by a restaurant in San Francisco. Well, Belden Barnes wine can be found on respectable menus in San Francisco as well, like A16, a fantastic wine-driven restaurant in the Marina District, and 14 other San Francisco restaurants. In the North Bay, their wines are available at Spinster Sisters in Santa Rosa, the Glen Ellen Star in Glen Ellen, and in Healdsburg at Dry Creek Kitchen, Spoon Bar, and Valette. All highly respected restaurants. There are many more, too. You can see the full list and their offerings of farmstead goods that you can buy from their website at beldenbarnes.com. In the last segment, he referred to his two kids, and I had to ask him about them because they have such interesting names.
Yeah, that's a funny story that relates to this site. So Olivia is our firstborn. She's 6 and a half, and Milo was born 18 months later. He's going to be 5 next week. Incidentally, we launched Belden Barnes when Olivia was 4, or no, Olivia, what was Olivia? Olivia was, 4, and Milo was 18 months. Mm. And so it made it so we don't really remember much at all that year. But
threw a little more risk into the whole thing.
Yeah. So Olivia is Olivia Bird Belden, and when I first met Lauren, we were both, as I said, we were both traveling a lot, and she was spending a lot of time on the East Coast, or we were passing in the night on planes. And one weekend I was staying out here in Sonoma. She hadn't been to the spot yet, and she said, "How are you sleeping?" I said, "Well, it'd be okay, but I've got these baby birds that are in a nest right above my bed that are waking me up at sunup." She said, "Oh my God, baby birds. I love baby birds. I've got to see them." And I said, "Well, I guess you're going to have to wake up here." And so fast forward a little bit, and she did stay. Unfortunately, by that time, when she woke up in the morning, she said, "Okay, I've got to see the baby birds." We went outside, and the nest was no longer there. So I immediately had a credibility problem until the next spring when there was another nest in that exact spot. So baby birds were always an inside joke. And when Lauren was pregnant with Olivia, we just joked that she finally had her own baby bird. And so Olivia's nickname is Birdie, and that's just sort of what stuck. Milo is...
That's a middle name too, though?
It's her middle name. Yeah. So it's Olivia Bird Belden. And then Milo is Milo Field Belden. And Milo is just a name that we both liked from the get-go. It's got some family connection back in Lauren's background. His middle name is Field because we wanted some nature involved in his name, much like Olivia's. Lauren's maiden name is Hirschfield, so we wanted to sort of grab onto that a little bit. And that's why they're named who they are.
Well, speaking of children, I guess you guys are volunteering to improve the lives of orphans in Tanzania. Is that right? As if you have more time on your hands, but tell me about that.
Well, that's actually, we still do support them. We so when we met, we fell in love quickly, and shortly thereafter decided, okay, we're going to take a hiatus because we think we're going to make a big life change here, and we decided to travel. We both had traveled some in our life, but not extensively, and we had a couple of benchmarks. It sort of went back to our first date. It was basically where would you want to go if you could travel? And we both said Africa. And so when we finally decided, hey, let's take a trip together that's meaningful, Africa was the stake in the ground. And we both wanted to go on safari. And Lauren, to her credit, she said, "I'm not going to Africa unless we're going to volunteer for a while." And so when we got to Africa, we spent about a month at an orphanage teaching English and math to some young orphans. And we were in Tanzania, and the thing about Tanzania is their high schools are taught in English. And so if you're not proficient in English, by the time you get to acceptance in high school, you're kicked out of the system. Wow. So we tried to pool as much means as we can. We also reached out to friends and family and worked to raise some money, and were able to raise enough to sponsor six kids to go to private primary school to prepare to go to high school. And they are next year, that will be their last year before they enter high school.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow. You have to respect people who are willing to put that kind of time and heartfelt effort into helping children across the globe. Good for them. There's one topic we have yet to discuss, the farm, the one that fulfilled Nate and Lauren's dreams, and it is a piece of land with a rich history.
You know, it was first homesteaded in the mid to late 1800s. We're actually standing in a milk barn from that era, and had various turns in agriculture and hospitality. In 1908, we know the property was opened up as a rural retreat for San Franciscans. There were tennis courts, croquet courts, and a dance hall.
Really?
And the dance hall is still standing. It's a pretty nondescript building that looks like, it looks a little bit more like a Texas roadhouse, but it was a dance hall. And the rumor is that it then became a speakeasy, and we think probably Prohibition knocked out the original business and then upsprouted a speakeasy in a place that was built to have a party. So up here in the middle of nowhere. So it makes sense.
Yeah.
Our first personal connection to the site is with a gentleman named Johnny Johnstone. He came back from World War II in 1945. His parents had purchased the place. And at that time, when he got here, it was a sheep farm and a prune orchard. And then it was first planted to grapes in 1973 by a gentleman named David Steiner. And we still call the vineyard Steiner Vineyard for those clients that we sell fruit to. We still sell about 50% of our fruit to other producers. And so if you see a Steiner Vineyard designate here in Sonoma, it's from this spot. But David was a big part in building, you know, he's right on the forefront of that resurgence of California wine, and was instrumental in developing the Bennett Valley AVA. And got to the point where he was wanting to make his life a little bit easier than farming. At points, there were 35 acres of grapes on the property, but farming that many grapes. And so sold the property. And so it changed hands a couple times before we got it. And then when we got it, it really, there was only about 8 acres of grapes left. And really widely spaced for 1970s era equipment, and diseased, and so wasn't really economical to farm. And that's when we started here, we were strictly farmers. So we were able to save an acre and a half of some Pinot that was planted in the late 80s, and then redeveloped the remainder of our 20 acres. So we've planted 18 and a half acres here.
Well, I know you don't have a tasting room yet, but when you do get around to that, I hope that includes a dance hall.
Well, we're gonna refurbish the dance hall because we love that building. It's actually just going to be an agricultural building. It won't be a hospitality building. But we're on the path. We actually just received our septic permits for everything 3 days ago, which is a big benchmark for us. And we're going to be moving forward with building a permanent space so that people can visit us on a regular basis. And we hope to have that in place by mid-year 2020.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, thank you.
Because I know that's something that can get pushed back pretty easy.
It can. You know,
Mostly the county's part.
Well, you know, the county has actually been good and supportive of the project. Like any development in California, particularly Northern California or Southern California, you know, you have to come to terms with your neighbors and make sure something's going to work within the community. But we're fully past that. So we now it's all about getting something put in place. That said, with the fires and just the general economy, it's a really tough time for a wine business that's just a family business to afford to get things built. But we're really wanting to move forward and get something in place so that we can start hosting people and providing some experiences.
I'm looking forward to that. Until they get their visitor space completed, keep your eyes open for Belden Barns at various tasting events around the area. And as I mentioned earlier, you can visit their website and see a full list of restaurants where you can find their wines and other helpful information and purchase their farmstead goods. That's BeldenBarns.com. Thanks to Nate for having me over and sharing his fantastic wine in an old milking barn, complete with a poetry room. He'll fill you in on that story. That's it for this podcast. There are more interviews and other wine-related facts, photos, and information at onthewineroad.us. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at JDWineRoad. If you're an iTunes podcast listener, please rate my show. It helps, and I appreciate it. On the Wine Road is researched, written, and produced by me, your humble host. Music by FirstCom. Thanks for joining me again today on the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis.